Hello all, this is Michelle Masurjian for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. My guest today is State Assemblyman John T. McDonald. Welcome, Mr. McDonald.
Michelle, it's great to be with you again.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to just jump right in with voting moving toward absentee ballot and the Board of Elections canceling the vote for the presidential primary. And there's a possibility, there's talk about low voter participation for these upcoming local elections, of which you are up for.
I'm in one of them. Yes,
you're in one of them. You know, what are your thoughts and concerns?
Well, you know, I think, you know, first and foremost, you know, at some point, you know, we've been promoting greater abilities to use the absentee ballot for people to do a mail-in type option. So, interestingly enough, as much as some people are kind of complaining about it, it's actually moving in a direction that we've always advocated for greater voter access. I think it's the quickness, right? And it is the concern. And that's going to be complicated by the fact that the presidential primary has been canceled, for lack of a better term, in New York State, which is disappointing. I think, you know, let's face it, New York State's always, its delegates are always going to go to a Democrat, but when you can walk into the voting booth or circle the Oval and have a piece of that, you feel like you did something, right? Yeah. So I think there's some kind of a disappointment with that, and I share that disappointment. That being said, everything these days is being evaluated based on, okay, what have we been doing? And by the way, what's in the best interest of public health? And at the end of the day, knowing that another 333 people died just alone last night or yesterday, public health is actually taking a much higher balance. So we need to be mindful of that.
Okay.
So, you know, the absentee ballots, it's going to be interesting. You know, people are all going to have, in the first or second week of May, have a letter emailed to them from the Board of Elections giving them the application with a self-addressed envelope to go back to the Board of Elections. They need to fill it out, and then they will get the ballot mailed to them, and then they need to mail it back. So it is a little bit cumbersome. It's too short of a window to do what I would have preferred, which is just to mail the actual ballot. But we have to make sure that, and this is, doesn't matter who you are in this election, you don't want to compromise the integrity of the election. And if it was done too hastily, there would have been a lack of confidence and a lot of challenges. So we're going to have to work through it the best we can, but people know they have three options, right? They can vote by absentee, really no excuse. Number two, they just check the box that under sickness, and that fits. Number two, early voting will still be in place, so they can pick and choose the times they want to go. And if they walk up and they think there's, now, to be honest with you, in the district I represent, we normally don't see those long staggering lines. Maybe occasionally, but not normally. But with the early voting, you'll have much more opportunity 10 days before to go in and vote. And then, of course, you can walk in on election day, which is going to be, you know, a good 9 hours that day as well. So there are options, and hopefully people will choose the best one. And as we say, be safe.
Right. Okay. So another topic that's kind of dear to my heart is what's happening with Norlite, and both you and Senator Neil Breslin put through legislation in March, early March this year, to ban the incineration of firefighting foam. And the city of Cohoes did pass last night the resolution to do a one-year moratorium. I guess the thing that I thought was kind of strange is why did the DEC monitor at Norlite not catch on to this earlier? So, I mean, they have a monitor there. I don't understand.
Yeah, I think DEC was aware of it to a degree. Let's be very honest. You know, unfortunately, this chemical category doesn't fall under a category of surveillance. It's not as if you can get permitted at this time to dispose of it there, because the United States government, the EPA, hasn't classified it properly. So it's one of those things where people may have known about it, but because legally, just legally, it didn't fall into that category of oversight, they were allowed to do it. Now, the legislation that Senator Breslin and I have in just completely bans the incineration of this firefighting foam, the PFAS materials. There are a lot of different names you can use for it in perpetuity until at some point science tells the story.
I'm going to interrupt you there. So I guess, why are we doing it now? It kind of seems like after the fact.
Why are we doing the legislation?
I agree with the legislation, and I think you're right. That's very important. But like you said, there's no science. It's been raised because the Air Force said that they believe there was really no satisfactory way to dispose of this.
Right. The EPA says that. The Air Force says that. So here's our option, right? I think we all know we need to find a responsible way to dispose of this material. I think we can agree with that. Putting it in landfills was not the appropriate thing. The Department of Defense went out, put out a contract, awarded a $5 million contract. Norlite got a piece of that contract to dispose of it. And I've talked to the president of Norlite, Sergio. You know, he's from Spain. They do things a little bit different than they do here in the United States. I'm not saying one's right or wrong. But he genuinely believes that he's got the solution to dispose of this substance so it doesn't negatively impact anybody. However, our problem is it's not been scientifically proven, and we need to prove it. My only thing is, please do not try to prove it in an urban environment where you have over 75,000 people just living in the 5 or 6 communities touching the city of Cohoes. This isn't just about Cohoes. It's about Troy. It's about Rensselaer. It's about Albany and Colony and Waterford and Green Island and Waterloo. So, you know, unlike most other issues I've dealt with, like, for example, the Dunn landfill, which was approved as a landfill before I got to the legislature, this time the toothpaste is still in the tube. We just don't want it out. And I'm trying to prevent the squeeze so we don't have toothpaste all over the place. And to that effect, because we're in this COVID-19 legislative session where we're not meeting yet to move legislation, instead of hoping that we're going to meet by the end of June to send something to the governor to consider by the end of the year, 2 days ago, Senator Breslin and I both sent a letter to the commissioner, Basil Sago, saying, "Commissioner, it's very likely we're not going to be able to address this legislatively. We hope to, but quite honestly, we believe through your own regulations in DEC, you can reclassify this substance and slow this process down." Because the city of Cohoes and Mayor Keeler and I have been in close communication on this whole process. I strongly encouraged them to do the moratorium. I thought it was the best thing in the absence of the uncertainty of our legislation. But quite honestly, I think DEC could pull the trigger right now and say, you know what, we're taking a timeout. We're going to put this on the sidelines, and we're going to let science evolve a little bit more to really see what's in the best interest of the public. And not only the people in Cohoes, not only the people at Saratoga Sites who live there, but the surrounding communities, and quite honestly, society in general.
Right. It's all over. Right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to move on to another topic. The governor has now given local pharmacies the ability to offer coronavirus diagnostic testing. Share your thoughts on this and if you see any barriers to implementation to get this up and running quickly.
The governor's executive order, which he just issued on Saturday, is a very good thing for healthcare in general, very good thing for the public. To be honest with you, 48 other states have been allowing diagnostic testing for several years. I actually have carried legislation in the last couple of years that hasn't been able to move forward yet that would allow pharmacists to do these type of tests. The executive order obviously exceeds, and the governor did the right thing. Now, there's a couple of different components you should be aware of. It allows for the diagnostic testing component, but it also allows for the serologic test, which is the antibody test. And so we need to look at this as, okay, what is government's focus now? And what are government's focus going to be 2, 3, 4, 5 months from now? Because this train is going to run for a long period of time. I think the independent pharmacies are going to be a little bit slower to the game, only because we don't have locations in other states where they've been doing this already. But what's encouraging, and I've helped facilitate this conversation between, you know, the state, the chain pharmacies, and the community pharmacies, we're all working together because the governor wisely believes, and I totally agree with this, that the more locations we have dispersed throughout the state of New York, the more opportunity we're going to give individuals, particularly in the area, the urban areas and the rural area, where there's already a dearth of medical services, give them more opportunity for access for tests, but also give them more opportunity for access for the antibody tests to see if they're immune. Because at some point, employers may be caused to look at, are you immune or not, in regards to returning to the workplace. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if it is going to happen, we know, particularly in our urban areas and the rural areas where some poverty is very prevalent, individuals have a difficult time getting a job to begin with. Why would we want to discourage them from having the opportunity to get to work if they can't get tested? So I think it's a very smart thing that the governor has done. I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow. I think it's going to take a couple of weeks before you'll start to see some of the larger chains start to put this into place. And I think the independents will be pretty close behind. Now, everyone may not choose to do it.
Oh, okay.
Not everybody, but, you know, my intention is, I think the biggest challenge overall is, and this isn't just a Maris Pharmacy issue or a Walgreens issue or a New York State issue, it's a federal issue. Availability of tests. Availability of tests is a big issue, and we need to get that under control in a very short order.
And what about setting up the space in your pharmacy? Do you have to have a...
Depends on what type of test we're doing. If we're doing just the nasal swabs or we're collecting a sample, I would prefer to do that outside. It's a nice time of year. People can just pull up in front of the store. We could have stations laid out because there's no business going on right now in downtown. And I have locations behind the pharmacy where I could do that. And you'll see pictures of the chain pharmacies and other independent pharmacies rearranging their parking lots to serve that function as a drive-through capacity. The bottom line is, for diagnostic, we don't want people who may be symptomatic exposing themselves to other people. So whereas some people now are just going through Burger King and getting their Whopper, well, maybe they'll be coming through the drive-through in the pharmacy to get their nasal swab and get a test and see if they're positive or negative. But we want to minimize impact, and we have to protect our employees, too.
Right, yeah. So then my other issue that we were kind of talking about before we got started was, you had mentioned a while ago that you were finding there was a shortage of just routine medications, and how a lot of the things that we need here just to make day-to-day things like aspirin and Tylenol, that it's all made either in China or India. Do you see this as in one of those other lessons learned? I mean, if there's another pandemic that we are not going to be able to make these medications right away?
Yeah. So the shortage of what I consider very inexpensive but impactful medications for hyperlipidemia, for diabetes, for hypertension, there have been a variety of shortages of those products for the last 6 to 10 months. And the challenge has been that, and you know, we read the same books, same authors, there is quality control issues with some of these manufacturing facilities, particularly in India. And it's aggravated by the fact that the raw materials will usually come from China. And this is actually an example, and it's a larger discussion about a failed public tax policy. You know, when I first got out of college in the 1980s, if you looked at the back of every prescription bottle, you would see brand name companies, and the drugs were all made in Puerto Rico. The federal government thought it was in our best interest to use our territory where there was a need for industry to put incentives in place to encourage folks to make drugs in Puerto Rico. And they did. They made a lot. And by the way, because it's U.S. territory, it was subject to greater FDA scrutiny. The problem when you have medications made in India is that the FDA inspectors may, and I say may, show up once every 3 years. Every 3 years. In the United States, it's every 6 months to a year. 3 years is an awful long time to go without review. Some cultures have different levels of ideals that they subscribe to when it comes to medication. As Catherine Evan pointed out in her book, which is called Bottle of Lies, there were major, this is not anecdotal, this is factual, it's part of the public record. There were companies that just lied. They lied on their records. They lied on their batches. They just outright lied. And shame on them. And shame on us for really encouraging it. It's actually caused me to take a little deeper look at what California has been trying to do, which is they're trying to make their own generic drugs. I think that's an aggressive thing. I don't know if that's really the wisest thing to do because that's an awfully large endeavor. But you know what? They're not far off the mark. And that's why I'm working on reviewing that. I'm also going to be sending correspondence to my federal representatives, my friend Paul Tonko and Senator Gillibrand and Senator Schumer, that maybe it won't get made in America, but it'll be made in Puerto Rico, which is close enough. And it's the same thing. We've, you know, as you know, New York itself has a very close bond with Puerto Rico. And quite honestly, if we can look at reversing those incentives and getting people to work in Puerto Rico and make good quality, inexpensive generics, we're in a much better position.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to wrap up. We've run out of time. How can folks keep in touch with you? I understand you send out a daily briefing and you've been doing some virtual town halls.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. We normally just do a once a week newsletter, but during the COVID-19 crisis, there's just so much to share. So we're sending them out. We've been sending them daily. I'm trying to be careful not to get McDonald's fatigue on these people. So we do it every other day. But, you know, the best way, obviously, you know, and you know, you go on the website, our website, emails go directly to me. As you know, I directly answer my emails. You don't get an automated response. As I always say to people, you get a response. You may not like it, but you get it from me. So email is always the best thing. When people call my office, particularly after hours, I leave my cell phone. They can call me. They can text me. People like to message me on Facebook, which I have to be honest with you. I'm on Facebook, obviously, pretty clearly I am. We post an awful lot. But I'm not very good at Messenger, so I'm not going to get Messenger I check once a day, maybe every other day. But we're pretty accessible. We're not hard to find. I am in my Albany office on a daily basis for the most part. I am hanging out a little more in my pharmacy in Cohoes because I have an office here as well, which we're hosting meetings like we're doing right now. I'm in one of our offices right now. So we're pretty accessible. You won't have a hard time finding me. As I always say, you'll find me. You'll get an answer. I just hope you like it.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. John McDonald. And this is Michelle Masurgeon for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.